Well, we come this evening to our next section in the book of Ecclesiastes, and I've titled it Making Sense of Old Age with God. You may or may not recognise this lady. She's Dame Esther Ranson. She's the founder of Childline and a famous TV presenter. She's in her 80s now, and she's been very vocal recently at her decision to sign up to a clinic in Switzerland called Dignitas. Now, she says this, I'd like to fly off to Zurich. She's got a terminal cancer diagnosis. She says, I'd like to fly off to Zurich with my nearest and dearest, have a fantastic dinner the night before. I'd love caviar, if possible, and the fact that it doesn't always agree with me doesn't matter, does it? I could even have champagne, which I'm deeply allergic to. Then the next day, go to this rather unappealing place where they do it. Listen to a favourite piece of music. Say goodbye to everybody. Tell them to cheer up. Hold my hand up for an injection or open my mouth for a rather disgusting medication. Now, her future may well be, she's saying there, to eat something that makes her sick, drink something she's allergic to before taking a vial of poison, which will kill her. Now, I shared that example with some caution, because I don't want to sound like I'm beating down on her. I don't want to condemn her for those words necessarily. Rather, I'm moved by compassion from those words. I'm moved by compassion to feel sorry for her. And in fact, I admire her honesty, because it's an extreme and revealing picture, isn't it, of our society's terror at old age, illness, pain, and increased dependence on others. To the extent where all she could think of her last days doing is eating something she doesn't like, drinking something that makes her sick, before taking a medication, poison. That's the greatest hope she could have. And you see, this basically negative attitude to old age, which is what comes with it, illness and pain and dependence on others, can be found in the church too, can't it? Have you, like me, ever talked to an older saint and they say to you, I just don't know why I'm still here. You ever heard that? I don't know why I'm still here. I'm not sure what I'm doing here anymore. I don't know why the Lord hasn't taken me yet. Life, perhaps in some ways, for them, might not have much joy. They are sitting in heaven's proverbial waiting room. And is it possible, we might wonder, to enter our older years then, not with fear or uselessness or fears and thoughts of suicide, but with joy instead? Is that possible? Is it possible? And you see, as we come to these verses in Ecclesiastes, even though it might not seem like that from what we when we read it first, I think the teacher is saying, yes, yes it is. Yes, it is possible to enter your older age with great joy. But actually, you know, this is a question that's relevant for all of us, isn't it? Whatever age and stage we are. Because as our studies in Ecclesiastes have shown, life is full of meaning which is elusive. The NIV translates it meaningless here, and I think that's unhelpful. It's not saying there is no meaning, it's saying there is meaning, but it's elusive. It's out of our grasp. We can't get our hands on it. It's just over there, and we're constantly chasing it. I wonder if you noticed the couple of times it cropped up in the passage we read. It says everything to come is meaningless, verse 8, but it also says youth and vigor are meaningless. Okay, so they're elusive. We don't know what's to come, and we can't get our hands around it. And even our youth and vigour, even as we're supposed to enjoy it, says the teacher, we can't fully get our hands around it, nor our heads around it too. Meaning is elusive, out of our reach. And we may ask, mightn't we, if we find that and feel that and experience that in our lives, how then can we rejoice? How could we rejoice? I was struck reading this week by the statistic that suicide is the single biggest killer of all people under the age of 35. And of all men under the age of 50 in our country, the single biggest killer. There is a hopelessness and a joylessness at all ages, isn't there? And we might ask, is there any answer? Well, yes, there is, says the teacher. And here, in the most directive that the teacher is, lots of the times in Ecclesiastes he's saying, I observe this, I see this, I know this. Here he gives two commands. And as he encourages us to look up to God and forward to the future, he encourages us to rejoice and to remember. Rejoice and remember. And I don't know if you noticed, but those two commands are woven through this passage. And so I've got 2 points this evening, and the first is this. It's rejoice in life, but remember the days of darkness. Now, lots of people will read the book of Ecclesiastes and write it off as a down in the dumps sort of a book. But it doesn't sit so well, does it, with the verses that we read from verse 7. Look at the unrestricted affirmation of the goodness of life in verse 7. It says, light is sweet, and it pleases the eyes to see the sun. Now, don't we know the truth of that in sun-starved Britain, right now in particular, just as spring is we feel round the corner? Oh, for a bit of sun, wouldn't it be lovely? Yes, it would. It's sweet. Light is sweet. It pleases the eyes to see the sun. And so it's possible in verse 8, the first half of verse 8, for the teacher to tell us that no matter how many years we live, his command is enjoy the life that you've been given. Enjoy it. Enjoy it. It comes again, that call to rejoice and to enjoy life in verse 9 too. To the youth are to be happy, he says. You who are young, be happy while you're young. Let your heart give you joy in the days of your youth. Follow the ways of your heart. They're to cast off anxiety in verse 10 and the troubles of your body. What is the teacher commending here exactly? This joy, this enjoyment of life. It sounds a little bit hedonistic, doesn't it? It sounds a little bit crazy. Like, go and have a great, crazy time. Do whatever you want. Well, not quite, because the end of verse 9, there's a reminder that whatever they do, God will bring them into judgment. So there's an account to be made for the way they use their freedom and their enjoyment of life. And verse 10, it says, cast off the troubles of your body. You could translate that, cast off the evils of your body. So there's a sense in which the teacher is not advocating unrestricted license to do whatever you want in your youth. No, but he's saying, enjoy life in your youth. Enjoy the life that God has given you. Enjoy it. Be happy in your youth. Receive life's joys with gladness. Don't snatch at it. Receive it. Receive it with gladness. So rejoice. He does say rejoice in life. But that's not the whole picture, is it? You and I know that. We go through life. It's not always easy to rejoice. We feel that, don't we? Because the world is not perfect. It's not the case that we always get to see the sweetness of light. It's not the case that we'll always see sun-soaked days in our lives, is it? But the teacher knows it. And he doesn't close his eyes to the problems of the world. We've seen time and again in this book that the teacher is encouraging us to live a wise life. And the wise life is one which faces up to the problems of the world and doesn't run away from them and ignore them. In fact, he challenges us to face reality, to call evil for what it is, to call oppression for what it is, to admit when we don't understand the world around us. And there's no difference here. Because what does he say in the bit that I skipped over when I was reading through verses 8 and 9, second half of verse 8, what does he say? But, let them remember the days of darkness, for there will be many. Now this might read to us like a bit of a damp squib, mightn't it? Rejoice, guys, have a great time, rejoice in life. Oh, but don't forget the days of darkness. Remember, it's going to get really, really hard. You know this feeling when you're heading out for a nice evening with your family or with your friends, perhaps. But you have a work task or a dull chore or some homework to finish when you get home. And it hangs over you. And you know you're going to need to do it at the end of the evening. And it makes it harder to enjoy the evening, doesn't it? And we might read that verse and think, well, how does that work? How can I enjoy life if I am to remember that there are dark days coming? How could that be? Well, I think the teacher's vision of enjoyment is actually encompasses the concept of dark days. Because his joy, the teacher's joy, the joy that the Bible commends and holds up for us, is not dependent, actually, on the circumstances of life. But rather, as we've seen time and again, it's about receiving, accepting your lot from God. Good and bad, delightful and dark. But what are those days of darkness? What are they? The teacher says, remember them, and there will be many of them. Well, I think it could be many things, and we've seen lots of candidates for them through the book, haven't we? Whether it's his talking about the elusiveness of work, or the elusiveness of time, or the elusiveness of wealth, and all these different ways that it plays out in life through the whole book. But particularly, the teacher has in mind, I think in this passage, the slow decline of old age. Note that he talks about the things to come. There will be many, he says. It's coming in the future. And then we notice the parallel in the first verse of chapter 12. This is to say, before the days of trouble come. The days of trouble come. So I think there is a natural link here from what the teacher's talking about. These days of darkness that are coming, and chapter 12, these days of trouble that are coming in the future as well. Now, it's worth saying that the first five verses of chapter 12, which we'll step through in a moment, are probably some of the most contested verses in the Bible in terms of what they actually mean, right? It's understandable roughly what they're painting. They're painting a picture of old age and death. But exactly how we're to understand each of the phrases in this poem, which is what it is, I think is open, really. And I'm going to suggest to you a few things they could mean. You might see other things they could mean. And come and talk to me afterwards. I'd be interested. Things that they bring to mind. Because it's painting a picture. It's poetry. It's painting a picture of a slow decline of the human body. They're actually a brutal depiction of physical decline in old age. Look down with me at chapter 12 and verse 1. It says, "Before the days of trouble come and the years approach when you will say, I find no pleasure in them." So the first thing the teacher notices is that often in old age there is a decline in someone's mental attitude. They start to find life unpleasant. They have no joy in the life that they live. He finds no pleasure in those days. Verse 2, "Before the sun and light and the moon and the stars grow dark," perhaps there's a clouding of the vision. "The clouds return after the rain." Well, normally after the rain, the clouds clear, don't they? They go away. But here they remain. Perhaps it emphasizes the plight of this person's sight. He can't see light clearly. Verse 3, "The keepers of the house tremble." Well, what were the things that kept the house in this person's heyday? Well, what were the things that protected the house, that shut the doors, that wielded a weapon in self-defense? The hands. And now, what are they doing? They're trembling. They're trembling. The strong men stoop. The strong men were those things that kept this person stood upright in life. But now they're bowed and weakened. Their legs. Still verse 3. "When the grinders cease because they are few." Well, what are these? Their teeth. They're falling out. They're going. They can't chew their food anymore. Verse 3, still, "Misty eyesight, cataracts, perhaps. Those looking through the windows grow dim. They can't see clearly. Things are clouding over for them." Verse 4, when the doors to the street are closed. You see, the street is a place of activity and hustle and bustle, but the doors to this person's outside, his hearing, perhaps, is closed. He can't hear anymore. He can't see all that's going on outside the doors. The sound of grinding fades. There's not so much eating going on in this house anymore. This person's appetite is diminishing. Verse 4 still. "When people rise up at the sound of birds, they wake easily in the morning at the sound of birdsong outside, but by way of contrast, their own voice weakens. But all their songs grow faint." Their voice becomes raspy, loses its volume and its strength and its vitality. Verse 5, "Heights are dangerous for this person. When people are afraid of heights, if you fall from a height, you may well never get up when you get to a certain age. And so we devise flats on the ground floor or have stair lifts inserted, don't we? But even if we did make it outside, the streets are full of danger. Younger men rush past in their cars far too fast, not accounting for the nerves and slowness of an older driver, perhaps. If you walk, people rush past, brushing you, impatient with your speed. There are dangers coming from all directions. Verse 5 still, "When the almond tree blossoms." Now, this one passed me by until I did a bit of research. This is what almond tree looks like in blossom, And if you look at it from, oh dear, I'm skipping past here, oh, hello. And if we look at it from above, it looks like this, okay? I think it's talking about someone's hair. Their hair turns white, like an almond tree in blossom. By contrast, the grasshopper drags itself along. Here is the most agile, light, and springy of creatures, and it's dragging itself along at an agonizing pace, it seems. End of verse 5. Desire is no longer stirred. Their appetite is diminished. Perhaps their hunger, perhaps their sex drive is diminished. Before, end of verse 5, they're called to their eternal home, and mourners go about the streets. Now, it's a rich and emotional and evocative poem. We could probably all think of people that this poem brings to mind. Maybe it even brings to mind some things in your own life. Far be it from me to say, okay, that's not my job to say, But this is now, by no means the sum total of the Bible's wisdom on old age. Old age is valued and held in high regard in the Bible, and we must remember that. Among other things, it's valued for its wisdom. We sung already about God, the Ancient of Days. It's a good thing. And what we have here doesn't depict all of that richness of positivity about old age. No, rather, it's a real depiction of the physical decline that's often associated with old age. And it's brutal, isn't it? It's brutal. The teacher isn't pulling his punches. He's facing reality. But if it's this brutal, why do we need to remember it? Why are we to remember the days of darkness that are to come? Well, we're remembering, aren't we, the poisoning effects of the fall on this world. That human rebellion which twisted the goodness of life and spoilt it and marred it, which introduced death and disease and illness and disability and decline. But here's the really important point. Christian rejoicing is not ignoring the problems in the world. It's not ignoring it. It's a rejoicing which is able to face the problems of the world head on. It's a joy that no amount of suffering, any of these afflictions in these verses and any others, can take away. But that would lead us to ask, wouldn't it? How? How is that possible? How can you talk about rejoicing in life and facing the darkness of life too? And how can you do that? How can a believer face the evils of the world and rejoice? The solution is in the verse that I'd skipped over there, the beginning of chapter 12. And it is as close as the teacher gets to a solution, I think. It's a very famous verse, chapter 12, verse 1. He says, "Remember your Creator in the days of your youth." Remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Let me go slowly through this verse. In other words, the teacher is saying, rejoice in this life by remembering your Creator. Remember. We tend to use this word, don't we, in two different ways. We use it to talk about a memory that we have, and we use it to talk about calling to mind something. I recently had a reunion of some people that I trained to teach with about 10 years ago, and lots of the conversation around the table went something like, remember when we, or remember when you. We're calling to mind something that happened in the past. I wonder if anyone's ever said to you, different type of remembering, remember, you're part of our family. Remember, you're part of our family. Calling something to mind. Telling them not to remember a distant memory, but something that's present and real. And I think the teacher here would have us think of both things. Both what's happened in the past, God made you, he created you. But more than that, he would have us bring to mind our God now. Your Creator, he says. Your Creator. In the film Toy Story, Andy's toys each have this written on the bottom of their boots, don't they? Andy, on the soles of their feet. A Buzz Lightyear gets carried away, thinking he's the real Buzz Lightyear, doesn't he? Until he finds this name written on the bottom of his boot, Andy. And he realizes that he's not actually Buzz Lightyear. No, he's owned by Andy. And he comes back to reality with the other toys. He had to remember who he was and whose he was in order to live properly in this world. And so it is that the teacher here, he calls us, all of us, whoever we are, to remember your Creator. Remember to call to mind the one who made you, the one who owns you, the one who gave you life and breath and everything else. Not a creator or the creator, but remember your Creator. In many ways, it's similar to the idea of fear God that we've heard and will hear again and again in the teacher's writings. Not that we're to be scared of God or downtrodden and mute before our Creator, but rather that we have before our eyes our Creator, in our mind, written on our souls, S-O-U-L-S, the name of whose we are, God, God's. Remember your Creator. It's Him who made you in the days of your youth. Now, age is just a number, so they say, don't they? And I think there's great truth to that. And I don't think we're to understand this here in this verse, as saying that there are young years and old years, and once you pass a certain point, well, that's it, it's too late. Okay? It's interesting, it says, doesn't it? Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come. Why does he say before? Does that mean that once you're in the days of trouble, you can't remember your Creator? No. No, it doesn't. But he's saying, remember your Creator in the days of your youth so that you're ready for the days of trouble. So that you have somebody with you in those times whom you can call on and live with and rejoice in. We all know, don't we, older folk who are younger in mind or attitude, or indeed even in physical ability, than those who are physically much younger than them. My grandfather-in-law, Kate's grandfather, he's 92. He's in the States. He's still working full-time. He's threatening to take a transatlantic flight to come and visit the family over here. And if he does, undoubtedly, we'll play 18 holes of golf. He's an extraordinary man. But this is what the teacher wants. He's not talking about just young people, remember your Creator. He's talking about everybody. Do you remember back in verse 8 of chapter 11? Do you remember, however many years they may live, let them enjoy them all? It was people, however old they are, whatever stage they're at, to enjoy their life, to rejoice by remembering their Creator. So why does he say, in the days of your youth? Why does he say that? Why does he label it like that? Well, I think we'd understand it best by thinking this. But the teacher is saying that the younger you grapple with the realities of who God is, the younger you remember whom your Creator is, the younger you let him shape the whole of your life, the better. Because remembering your Creator is the secret to a joyful life. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come. Not because you can't remember him in the days of trouble, but because remembering him before will anchor your life and your soul. When I was a young boy, we used to go sailing off the west coast of Scotland, some of the best holidays that I can ever remember. And when we arrived in a pleasant-looking bay, if the weather was all right, wasn't always like that, if there wasn't a buoy to tie to, we'd drop the anchor. And over would go the side of the boat, this big hunking piece of metal, and clatter, 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 I can still remember that sound of it rattling over the side of the boat and hitting the ocean floor. And then would come the checks to see, is the anchor holding? Are we slipping? Are we moving? And you'd fix a point on the horizon and make sure you weren't moving. Now, we've all sailed into pleasant bays in our lives, all of us, because there is a goodness, even in this troubled life, even in the most troubled of situations, there's a goodness to the world that God has made. And each of us will drop an anchor in our lives. We will. The question is, where will you drop your anchor? Will it be solid and secure? Will it hold your weight? Many people today would like to drop their anchor in themselves, to trust themselves in life. But if you drop it in yourself, then I'm afraid to say, it won't bear the weight of all that life will throw at you. If you drop it in someone else or something else, they won't always be there for you. But if you drop it in your Creator, remember your Creator, says the teacher, then your ship will never move. You'll be anchored, safe and secure. No amount of storms or troubles will ever dislodge you. You see, old age is not something to be scared of or to run away from. There's joy in the whole of life for the person who anchors their life in their Creator. This has been hammered home to me since I've arrived here in Harpenham by meeting one particular person. And if I may, I'd like to share his story just as I close this evening. Kevin became a Christian a few years ago through contact made at Christchurch with members at Harbin and Money Advice. He's a paraplegic. He can't move. He can't eat on his own, let alone leave his flat or his bed. And yet his testimony is one of joy. Isn't that remarkable? That's surprising. His testimony is one of joy. He didn't remember his creator in the days of his youth, but he's often told me that he wished he had. But now that he's found an anchor for his soul, it's changed him completely. For Kevin doesn't just remember the creation of the world around him, but the new creation that's been brought about in his heart by Jesus. So whereas before he was, well, angry and rude to his carers and tight with his money, now, because of Jesus, he smiles at life. His words, not mine. He smiles at life. He's kind to his carers, where he can be, and he's generous with the little that God has given him. And he's a man that, though he has hardly left his bed, let alone his flat, for months, years, really, because of Jesus, he says, I love life. His words, not mine. I love life, he says. Wow. Hardly leaves his bed, let alone his flat. He now knows a joy that controls the whole of his life and gives him a meaning he cannot ignore. This week, just gone, we read Philippians chapter 1, verse 21 together. For me, says Paul, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. You see, Kevin knows where he's going, his eternal home. He's looking up to God, his creator, and he's looking forward to that place, that gain which will be his, eternity. But while he's here on earth, his life is about Christ, the one who created him and recreated him, who made him new, his righteousness, his joy, his freedom. So Kevin enjoys his life all the while remembering the days of darkness, which he's painfully aware of. And Kevin rejoices in life by remembering his creator. I wonder, could the same be said for you? Well, we're going to sing a hymn to close. And it's a hymn which puts into words better than I could. I'll put up the first verse there. Puts into words better than I could how remembering your creator as you approach the end of life, as you find your physical body disappointing you and letting you down. It's a song that reminds us of the great closeness of God with us, even in those moments, and of the great power of somebody, even stuck in their room, on their bed, not able to leave their room. Somebody who can be connected to the God of the universe, who can pray, who can find great joy, even in the midst of days of darkness. Let's stand and sing this song together.